And we are live right now with Representative Bryce Edgemond. He is running right now for District 37. It represents our area and so many other areas across rural Alaska, the Southwest Alaska. Election day is tomorrow. We've been doing interviews with so many different candidates. You can go online at apradio.org and check out the different interviews. And we have a follow-up interview now with Representative Edgemond. Thank you so much for coming on the air. We really appreciate your time. So, Representative Edgemond, so many matters to talk about, so much, so little time. I was curious, though, to start things off. We always like to start with an easy question. This election is tomorrow. What would you like to say to people before they go on to the ballot box?
Well, I think the choice is pretty distinct between me and my opponents. My opponent is somebody who I think is well-meaning and is campaigning hard, but he's an individual who's never been to Juneau, never held elected office. Fairly new to the state, and versus myself, Speaker of the House, the first Alaska Native Speaker, somebody who has a lot of experience in Juneau, and somebody who's worked hard to keep school funding intact and to get more money in the permanent fund dividend and to make sure that fish and game management was sufficiently funded. So I think the choice is pretty clear tomorrow in terms of my race. You know, in terms of the governor's race, I think we also have a pretty stark contrast there as well. Initially, I was supporting Governor Walker, and when he pulled out of the race, I shifted my support to Mark Begich, and I'll tell you why. I think Mark Begich will help us protect small schools. I think he's going to help us protect what little services we get in rural Alaska and not take, a cleaver to the budget in terms of balancing it. And I also think, more importantly, from a commercial fishing standpoint, Mark Begich is going to work with Coastal Alaska in terms of getting the right commissioner in place and also work with him in terms of getting the right board of fish appointees versus Mike Dunleavy, who I think is going to have a decidedly sports fishing approach to things, and somebody who's been largely funded by Bob Penny, who we all know, is from the lower Cook Inlet and, is a huge advocate behind sports fisheries.
Yes, that is a very important topic that I'd love to actually ask you more about with the idea of the commission and also with Department of Fish and Game. We did have a chance to talk to both of the gubernatorial candidates about these topics. So again, go online at AP Radio and check out what they said about Department of Fish and Game and commissioners. I think that as we go forward, so much of the discussion centers around the permanent fund dividend and economics in general. You said that there's a stark contrast between you and Mr. Weatherby. I was curious, what would you say is the contrast in terms of the permanent fund and the budget matters?
Well, for the first time in Alaska's history, earnings for the permanent fund are doing two things, not just funding the permanent fund dividend as it did before, but it's also funding the school in Sandpoint, the fish and game staff that we have in the region, and any and other state services that we get out in rural Alaska. That's one big difference, but it's really important to note that now that the permanent fund itself is supporting, sort of having this dual purpose, that we need to make sure that we're managing it for the long term, and that a $1,600 dividend today can help ensure a $1,600 dividend tomorrow. Whereas if you look at the long-term analysis provided to the manager of the permanent fund, if you were to overdraw the fund today, and I know a lot of people may sort of not agree with that, but if you overdraw the fund today, there are scenarios just a short 4 or 5 years down the road where you could have a zero dividend. And that, to me, is totally unacceptable. So I've worked hard to make sure we get a larger dividend, more funding for our schools, and to protect state services that we get in rural Alaska. I think that's the combination that the constituents have asked me to do it. I know not everybody supports that. There are those that would take a full permanent fund dividend and have, teachers go and leave the school and so forth, but that's not what I'm hearing from the bulk of my constituents.
I think that one argument that you hear kind of commonly spoken about is the idea that the permanent fund is the people's money and that it wasn't proper to use the permanent fund without permission from the people. What would you say to someone who came to you and had that argument that said, this is our money, this is the people's money, it wasn't right for the legislature to take it without asking?
Well, Jay Hammond is largely credited with creating the permanent fund dividend. And Jay Hammond always said that the day was going to come when we were going to have to use the earnings for the permanent fund to do two things. One, to pay for an ample permanent fund dividend, but as well to make sure that basic services are provided to all of Alaska. And that day is here. And that's what I would tell anyone, that we did the best we could. The votes weren't there in Juneau for a full permanent fund dividend. My opponent, Mr. Weatherby, again, never having been to Juneau before, never held elected office, is telling everyone that he's going to somehow get them a full permanent fund dividend all on his own, or I'm not sure how he's going to do it. But the fact of the matter is that people are concerned about the long-term viability of the permanent fund. And, you know, again, back to the notion that we want to create a long-term sustainable permanent fund dividend so that future generations can get a sizable dividend as well as a quality public education in their community.
So I've heard from multiple candidates talk about the earnings reserve and how large it is right now. We've talked to Mr. Begich and also Mr. Dunleavy, and they've talked about 18-some billion dollars that's in the earnings reserve. And I think that this is a bit of a mystery because there's so much money talked about with the permanent fund and so much when you talk about savings. And that's where the idea I've heard comes from about using for a full dividend for everybody. And even Mr. Dunleavy talked about going backwards to give retroactive dividends. I've asked them both, and I was curious as a legislature what your view is on this. I've talked to all the candidates and asked them, is that within the purview of the governor to do that, to take the money for a permanent fund dividend, and would that be a legislative action? And what is the reserve budget, and what could that be used for?
So any spending from the permanent fund has to go through the legislative process. The legislature has the power to appropriate. The governor has the power to veto line item, the budget, and cancel, sort of any additions that the legislature may put in the budget. The permanent fund earnings is a separate fund that's next to the corpus of the principal. And keep in mind that the permanent fund itself was created constitutionally in 1976. It's just this sort of, pot of money that was set aside to do good things for Alaskans. The permanent fund dividend itself was created in state statute. Very different distinction. Constitution for the fund itself, the dividend for created in state statute in 1982. So in terms of the permanent fund itself, arguably you could pay a full PFD today. You could go back and pay 2016 and 2017. But if the stock market has any kind of a course correction or a downturn, which it's going to experience here and maybe sooner than later, like we saw in the first week of February this year, the permanent fund lost $4 billion in a matter of less than a week. So the permanent, the corpus of the fund can shrink very quickly, and we have to keep a long-term eye on, like I've been saying, creating a good-sized permanent fund dividend today so we can have a good-sized permanent fund dividend tomorrow and quality schools and all the other services that are important to rural Alaskans.
So commonly, going to the other side of the coin, we're talking about money coming into the government here, but the other side of the coin is money that goes out from the government in terms of expenses. The state of Alaska pays quite a bit in expenses for a number of different items. Now, people say, and there are several candidates that would like to see increased budget cuts and that there's a waste out there or that there's room for areas to be cut. Would you say that that's true, that the government needs to be cut more, that there is areas of expenses that could be sliced back? And if so, where would you like to see that happen?
Well, again, this is another major difference between myself and Mr. Weatherby. He's going to join a party that is going to focus on making large reductions to education and health, social services, and other services that go out to rural Alaska, because that's the only place you can cut the budget right now, in terms of making any sort of wholesale budget reductions. So that, to me, is a huge difference right there. I favor a more measured approach, looking for more, sort of strategic reductions in state agencies. But as well, when the day comes, having to look for new revenues, because, I'll take non-resident commercial fishermen, for example. We've got almost $2 billion a year that leave the state from earnings of non-resident fishermen, non-resident oil workers, tourism workers, and so forth. And why shouldn't they be paying a little bit of you know, paying Alaskans for services that they use and contributing to the state economy, and maybe alleviating some of that pressure on the Permafund dividends so that in years going forward we can have a larger PFD, you know. So I support taking a more holistic approach, again, protecting what services we get out in the bush these days, what services Sandpoint gets, and keeping an eye on the longer-term view of it all.
So the idea of taxing or getting revenue into the government from people that come from out of state in order to work on, say, the North Slope and other places, is it possible just to tax people who come in, say, we're going to create a tax and we're not going to income tax for people who are residents of Alaska, but we're going to tax people who are working in and out? Would there be a way just to focus, like have kind of like a precision tax in that realm, or would it have to be a one for all?
No, it would essentially have to be a tax that's applied uniformly to all wage earners in Alaska, both resident and non-resident. And I think, Austin, I'd also point out that the coalition that I was involved in did pass a tax that would have required the oil industry to step up and pay their fair share. That got summarily rejected in the Senate. That was 2 years ago. That as well would have alleviated pressure on the permanent fund dividend.
All right. I think that for many people, the economy, of course, is what really comes to mind when you go to the ballot box. But there's so many other issues as well. There's crime. There's the opioid epidemic. And also out here, there's fisheries. You mentioned sports fisheries. Who would you like to see as the head of the Department of Fish and Game or for commissioners? How would you balance the act there? Because there's so many competing interests and so much need for sport fishing and commercial fishing and subsistence fishing. How do you see the government being able to go between these interested parties and making sure everyone has a fair opportunity to utilize this resource?
Well, and I think that's a key word, fair. I prefer to see the commissioner being somebody with commercial fishing backgrounds and maybe a deputy commissioner or others within the agency having sports fishing background. That's my personal bias. That's something that I've always held to over the years. But it's also an individual who's got experience, or should have experience, with the Board of Fish process, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council process, with an array of fisheries across the state that are very complicated, and from a policy perspective, you know, very difficult to manage and certainly difficult to master as well.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that comes up frequently, but we see things that happen. You know, this ballot measure one, how do you stand about measure one? What would you say about that proposal? Is it something that you support or not support? And if so, why?
Well, I support ballot measure one. I didn't initially, but as I got into the issue and I looked at the details of the two court decisions, Superior Court and the Supreme Court affirming the Superior Court's decision to put the measure on the ballot this fall, you know, if I'm going to give a benefit of the doubt, it's going to be to protecting salmon habitat. And I would readily admit, however, if the initiative passes, which I don't expect it to ultimately, but if it does pass, the legislature is going to have to go in and, you know, make some modifications, revise some of the terminology, and probably test some of the language a little bit more, because the initiative is very broadly written. It's very expansive. It covers a lot of territory. So I support it. And if it doesn't pass, I would hope, and I would be part of that effort here in a couple of days, to get the Coastal Zone Management Program back into place, something that I think could help protect salmon habitat, or some other measure that would make sure that, you know, when it comes to major development projects in particular, that there is no way that you can dig up a salmon stream without, you know, suffering an egregious penalty or going through a very rigorous process. Because right now in state law, you can dig up an anadromous salmon stream and, you know, do it with without, you know, as long as it gets approved via the permitting process, you can do it and get away with it and there'd be no repercussions. All the while, science showing that if you do damage an anadromous salmon stream, you can't reconstitute it. You can't put it back together and make it like it was before, you know, the damage occurred.
So we've got a couple more minutes here. Is there anything that you'd like to say to people here in the Aleutians East Borough before they go out and vote on Tuesday? Any final thoughts or words that you'd like to have for your message to go across?
Well, I've had the good fortune of representing the Lucians East Borough for many years now. I've worked with a number of the leaders back in the 90s. You know, I know many of the residents very well, and have rolled up my sleeves and sat down at many tables working on problems you know, working with them relative to the challenges of the Marine Highway System or harbors or docks or whatever project that we might have been working on, and keeping the greater good in focus. So I would say that I look forward to representing them for two more years coming up, and keeping those relationships intact and doing the very best that I can as someone who's, you know, again, the first Speaker of the House with Alaska Native blood, the first Speaker of the House from rural Alaska, somebody with seniority clout, if you will, and somebody who can take a priority issue from the borough and actually move it forward in the House so that my counterpart in the Senate, Senator Hoffman, can do his job. And like we did with the King Cove Road, you know, there was $10 million in the budget for that last session. We saved that $10 million because we had seniority, not because we were brand new and we'd never been to Juneau before.
We appreciate your time, Representative Edgemond. It's very close to election, so I know everyone's time is packed. So thank you for coming on air and talking with people out here in the Aleutians East. And appreciate that, and hope to talk to you soon.
It's been my pleasure, Austin. Thank you.
Representative Bryce Edgemond, he is running for election on the Democrat ticket over for District 37. William Weatherby is in town here in Sandpoint. He just came over from King Cove, so he's going around and talking to everybody, and we'll have him on the air here in the very near future to hear his side of the story. He's running on the Republican ticket and looking forward to hear his ideas as well. So make sure you get out and vote tomorrow, Tuesday, all day. It should be open, I think, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. down here at the City Hall. But make sure you get out there and have your voice heard. We get this awesome opportunity to do so. If you can, even vote early. There's still a little bit of time to come down and get a ballot right now, but that window is closing quickly. So if you don't do it today, make sure to come down and vote tomorrow.